are Dhamma followers or faith followers all have enlightenment as their destination. 47. Monks, the Dhamma well expounded by me thus is clear, open, evident, and free of patchwork. In the Dhamma well expounded by me thus, those who have sufficient faith in me, sufficient love for me, all have heaven as their destination. From Majjhima Nikaya 22. Alagadupama Sutta 1. 140 through 142. Verse 4. The completeness of the teaching. 6. When a monk has abandoned craving, cut it off at the root, done away with it so that it is no longer subject to future arising, that monk is an arahant with taints destroyed, one who has lived the spiritual life, done what had to be done, laid down the burden, reached his own goal, utterly destroyed the fetters of existence, and is completely liberated through final knowledge. 7. Apart from Master Gotama, is there any monk, Master Gotama's disciple, who by realizing it for himself with direct knowledge, in this present life enters upon and dwells in the liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, that is taintless with the destruction of the taints? There are, Vacha, not only 100 or 200 or 300 or 400 or 500, but far more monks, my disciples, who by realizing it for themselves with direct knowledge, in this present life enter upon and dwell in the liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, that is taintless with the destruction of the taints. 8. Apart from Master Gotama and the monks, is there any, none, Master Gotama's disciple, who by realizing it for herself with direct knowledge, in this present life enters upon and dwells in the liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, that is taintless with the destruction of the taints? There are not only 100 or 500, my disciples, who by realizing it for themselves with direct knowledge, in this present life enter upon and dwell in the liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, that is taintless with the destruction of the taints. 9. Apart from Master Gotama, and the monks and nuns, is there any male lay follower, Master Gotama's disciple, clothed in white, leading a life of celibacy, who, with the destruction of the 5 lower fetters, will be reborn spontaneously in the pure abodes, and there attain final nibbana without ever returning from that world? There are not only 100 or 500, but far more male lay followers, my disciples, clothed in white, leading lives of celibacy, who, with the destruction of the 5 lower fetters, will be reborn spontaneously in the pure abodes, and there attain final nibbana without ever returning from that world. 10. Apart from Master Gotama, the monks and nuns, and the male lay followers clothed in white, leading lives of celibacy, is there any male lay follower, Master Gotama's disciple, clothed in white, enjoying sensual pleasures, who carries out his instruction, responds to his advice, has gone beyond doubt, become free from perplexity, gained intrepidity, and become independent of others in the teacher's dispensation? There are not only 100 or 500, but far more male lay followers, my disciples, clothed in white, enjoying sensual pleasures, who carry out my instruction, respond to my advice, have gone beyond doubt, become free from perplexity, gained intrepidity, and become independent of others in the teacher's dispensation. 11. Apart from Master Gotama, the monks and nuns, and the male lay followers clothed in white, both those leading lives of celibacy and those enjoying sensual pleasures, is there any female lay follower, Master Gotama's disciple, clothed in white, leading a life of celibacy, who, with the destruction of the 5 lower fetters, will be reborn spontaneously in the pure abodes, and there attain final nibbana without ever returning from that world? There are not only 100 or 500, but far more female lay followers, my disciples, clothed in white, leading lives of celibacy who, with the destruction of the five lower fetters, will be reborn spontaneously in the pure abodes, and there attain final nibbana without ever returning from that world. 12. Apart from Master Gotama, the monks and nuns, and the male lay followers clothed in white, both those leading lives of celibacy and those enjoying sensual pleasures, and the female lay followers clothed in white leading lives of celibacy, is there any one female lay follower, Master Gotama's disciple, clothed in white enjoying sensual pleasures, who carries out his instruction, responds to his advice, has gone beyond doubt, become free from perplexity, gained intrepidity, and become independent of others in the teacher's dispensation? There are not only 100 or 500, but far more female lay followers, my disciples, clothed in white enjoying sensual pleasures, who carry out my instruction, respond to my advice, have gone beyond doubt, become free of perplexity, gained intrepidity, and become independent of others in the teacher's dispensation. 13. Master Gotama. If only Master Gotama were accomplished in this Dhamma, but no monks were accomplished, then this spiritual life would be deficient in that respect. But because Master Gotama and monks are accomplished in this Dhamma, this spiritual life is thus complete in that respect. If only Master Gotama and monks were accomplished in this Dhamma, but no nuns were accomplished, then this spiritual life would be deficient in that respect. But because Master Gotama, monks, and nuns are accomplished in this Dhamma, this spiritual life is thus complete in that respect. If only Master Gotama, monks, and nuns were accomplished in this Dhamma, but no male lay followers clothed in white, leading lives of celibacy were accomplished, then this spiritual life would be deficient in that respect. But because Master Gotama, monks and nuns, and male lay followers clothed in white, leading lives of celibacy, are accomplished in this Dhamma, this spiritual life is thus complete in that respect. If only Master Gotama, monks and nuns, and male lay followers clothed in white, leading lives of celibacy were accomplished in this Dhamma, but no male lay followers clothed in white enjoying sensual pleasures were accomplished, then this spiritual life would be deficient in that respect. But because Master Gotama, monks and nuns, and male lay followers clothed in white, both those leading lives of celibacy and those enjoying sensual pleasures, are accomplished in this Dhamma, this spiritual life is thus complete in that respect. If only Master Gotama, monks and nuns, and male lay followers clothed in white were accomplished in this Dhamma, but no female lay followers clothed in white leading lives of celibacy were accomplished, then this spiritual life would be deficient in that respect. But because Master Gotama, monks and nuns, male lay followers clothed in white, and female lay followers clothed in white leading lives of celibacy are accomplished in this Dhamma, this spiritual life is thus complete in that respect. If only Master Gotama, monks and nuns, male lay followers clothed in white, and female lay followers clothed in white leading lives of celibacy were accomplished in this Dhamma, but no female lay followers clothed in white enjoying sensual pleasures were accomplished, then this spiritual life would be deficient in that respect. But because Master Gotama, monks and nuns, male lay followers clothed in white, both those leading lives of celibacy and those enjoying sensual pleasures, and female lay followers clothed in white, both those leading lives of celibacy and those enjoying sensual pleasures, are accomplished in this Dhamma, this spiritual life is thus complete in that respect. 14. Just as the river Ganges inclines toward the sea, slopes toward the sea, flows toward the sea, and reaches the sea, so too Master Gotama's assembly, with its homeless ones and its householders, inclines toward Nibbana, slopes toward Nibbana, flows toward Nibbana, and reaches Nibbana. From Majjhima Nikaya 73, Mahavakchagota Sutta 1:490-493. Verse 5. Seven kinds of noble persons. 11. Monks, I do not say of all monks that they still have work to do with diligence, Nor do I say of all monks that they have no more work to do with diligence. 12. I do not say of those monks who are arahants with taints destroyed, who have lived the spiritual life, done what had to be done, laid down the burden, reached their own goal, utterly destroyed the fetters of existence, and are completely liberated through final knowledge, that they still have work to do with diligence. Why is that? They have done their work with diligence. They are no more capable of being negligent. 13. I say of those monks who are trainees, whose minds have not yet reached the goal, and who are still aspiring to the unsurpassed security from bondage, that they still have work to do with diligence. Why is that? Because when those venerable ones make use of suitable lodgings and associate with good friends and nurture their spiritual faculties, they may, by realizing it for themselves with direct knowledge, in this present life enter upon and dwell in that supreme goal of the spiritual life for the sake of which clansmen rightly go forth from the home life into homelessness. Seeing this fruit of diligence for these monks, I say that they still have work to do with diligence. 14. Monks, there are 7 kinds of persons to be found existing in the world. What 7? They are 1 liberated in both ways, 1 liberated by wisdom, a body witness, 1 attained to view, 1 liberated by faith, a Dhamma follower, and a faith follower. 15. What kind of person is 1 liberated in both ways? Here, some person contacts with the body and dwells in those liberations that are peaceful and formless, transcending forms, and his taints are destroyed by his seeing with wisdom. This kind of person is called one liberated in both ways. I do not say of such a monk that he still has work to do with diligence. Why is that? He has done his work with diligence. He is no more capable of being negligent. 16. What kind of person is one liberated by wisdom? Here, some person does not contact with the body and dwell in those liberations that are peaceful and formless, transcending forms, but his taints are destroyed by his seeing with wisdom. This kind of person is called one liberated by wisdom. I do not say of such a monk that he still has work to do with diligence. Why is that? He has done his work with diligence. He is no more capable of being negligent. 17. What kind of person is a body witness? Here some person contacts with the body and dwells in those liberations that are peaceful and formless, transcending forms, and some of his taints are destroyed by his seeing with wisdom. This kind of person is called a body witness. I say of such a monk that he still has work to do with diligence. Why is that? Because when that venerable one makes use of suitable lodgings and associates with good friends and nurtures his spiritual faculties, he may, by realizing it for himself with direct knowledge, in this present life enter upon and dwell in that supreme goal of the spiritual life for the sake of which clansmen rightly go forth from the home life into homelessness. Seeing this fruit of diligence for such a monk, I say that he still has work to do with diligence. 18. What kind of person is one attained to view? Here, some person does not contact with the body and dwell in those liberations that are peaceful and formless, transcending forms, but some of his taints are destroyed by his seeing with wisdom, and he has reviewed and examined with wisdom the teachings proclaimed by the Tathagata. This kind of person is called one attained to view. I say of such a monk that he still has work to do with diligence. Why is that? Because when that venerable one, into homelessness. Seeing this fruit of diligence for such a monk, I say that he still has work to do with diligence. 19. What kind of person is one liberated by faith? Here, some person does not contact with the body and dwell in those liberations that are peaceful and formless, transcending forms, but some of his taints are destroyed by his seeing with wisdom, and his faith is planted, rooted, and established in the Tathagata. This kind of person is called one liberated by faith. I say of such a monk that he still has work to do with diligence. Why is that? Because when that venerable one, into homelessness, seeing this fruit of diligence for such a monk, I say that he still has work to do with diligence. 20. What kind of person is a Dhamma follower? Here some person does not contact with the body and dwell in those liberations that are peaceful and formless, transcending forms, and his taints are not yet destroyed by his seeing with wisdom, but those teachings proclaimed by the Tathagata are accepted after being pondered to a sufficient degree with wisdom. Furthermore, he has these qualities: the faith faculty, the energy faculty, the mindfulness faculty, the concentration faculty, and the wisdom faculty. This kind of person is called a Dhamma follower. I say of such a monk that he still has work to do with diligence. Why is that? Because when that venerable one, into homelessness, seeing this fruit of diligence for such a monk, I say that he still has work to do with diligence. 21. What kind of a person is a faith follower? Here, some person does not contact with the body and dwell in those liberations that are peaceful and formless, transcending forms, and his taints are not yet destroyed by his seeing with wisdom. Yet he has sufficient faith in and love for the Tathagata. Furthermore, he has these qualities: the faith faculty, the energy faculty, the mindfulness faculty, the concentration faculty, and the wisdom faculty. This kind of person is called a faith follower. I say of such a monk that he still has work to do with diligence. Why is that? Because when that venerable one makes use of suitable lodgings and associates with good friends and nurtures his spiritual faculties, he may, by realizing it for himself with direct knowledge, in this present life enter upon and dwell in that supreme goal of the spiritual life, for the sake of which clansmen rightly go forth from the home life into homelessness. Seeing this fruit of diligence for such a monk, I say that he still has work to do with diligence. From Majjhima Nikaya 70, Kitagiri Sutta, 1, 477 through 479. Part 2. Stream Entry. Verse 1. The Four Factors Leading to Stream Entry. The Blessed One said to the Venerable Sariputta, "Sariputta, it is said, a factor for stream entry, a factor for stream entry. What now, Sariputta, is a factor for stream entry? Association with superior persons, Venerable Sir, is a factor for stream entry. Hearing the true Dhamma is a factor for stream entry. Careful attention is a factor for stream entry. Practice in accordance with the Dhamma is a factor for stream entry." "Good, good, Sariputta. It is as you say, Sariputta. It is said, the stream, the stream. What now is the stream?" "This noble eightfold path, Venerable Sir, is the stream. That is, right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration." "Good, good, Sariputta. It is as you say, Sariputta. It is said, a stream enterer, a stream enterer. What now is a stream enterer?" "One who possesses this noble eightfold path, Venerable Sir, is called a stream enterer. This venerable one of such a name and clan." "Good, good, Sariputta. One who possesses this noble eightfold path is a stream enterer. This venerable one of such a name and clan." Samyutta Nikaya, 55.5.5, 410 through 411. Verse 2. Entering the fixed course of rightness. Monks, the eye is impermanent, changing, undergoing alteration. The ear, the nose, the tongue, the body, the mind is impermanent, changing, undergoing alteration. One who places faith in these teachings and resolves on them thus is called a faith follower, one who has entered the fixed course of rightness, entered the plane of superior persons, transcended the plane of the worldlings. He is incapable of doing any deed by reason of which he might be reborn in hell, in the animal realm, or in the domain of afflicted spirits. He is incapable of passing away without having realized the fruit of stream entry. One for whom these teachings are accepted thus after being pondered to a sufficient degree with wisdom is called a Dhamma follower, one who has entered the fixed course of rightness, entered the plane of superior persons, transcended the plane of the worldlings. He is incapable of doing any deed by reason of which he might be reborn in hell, in the animal realm, or in the domain of afflicted spirits. He is incapable of passing away without having realized the fruit of stream entry. One who knows and sees these teachings thus is called a stream enterer, no longer bound to the lower world, fixed in destiny, with enlightenment as his destination. Samyutta Nikaya 25.1 3. 225. Verse 3. The breakthrough to the Dhamma. The Blessed One took up a little bit of soil in his fingernail and addressed the monks thus. Monks, what do you think? Which is more? The little bit of soil that I have taken up in my fingernail, or this great earth? Venerable sir, the great earth is more. The little bit of soil that the Blessed One has taken up in his fingernail is trifling. It does not amount to 100th part, or 1,000th part, or 100,000th part of the great earth. So too, monks, for a noble disciple, a person accomplished in view who has made the breakthrough, the suffering that has been destroyed and eliminated is more, while that which remains is trifling. The latter does not amount to 100th part, or 1,000th part, or 100,000th part of the former mass of suffering that has been destroyed and eliminated, since there is a maximum of 7 more lives. Of such great benefit, monks, is the breakthrough to the Dhamma. Of such great benefit is it to obtain the vision of the Dhamma. Samyutta Nikaya 13.1 2. 133 through 134. Verse 4. The four factors of a stream enterer. Monks, a noble disciple who possesses 4 things is a stream enterer, no longer bound to the lower world, fixed in destiny, with enlightenment as his destination. What for? Here, monks, a noble disciple possesses confirmed confidence in the Buddha thus. The Blessed One is an Arahant, perfectly enlightened, accomplished in true knowledge and conduct, fortunate knower of the world, unsurpassed leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of devas and humans, the Enlightened One, the Blessed One. He possesses confirmed confidence in the Dhamma thus. The Dhamma is well expounded by the Blessed One, directly visible, immediate, inviting one to come and see, worthy of application, to be personally experienced by the wise. He possesses confirmed confidence in the Sangha thus. The Sangha of the Blessed One's disciples is practicing the good way, practicing the straight way, practicing the true way, practicing the proper way. That is, the 4 pairs of persons, the 8 types of individuals. This Sangha of the Blessed One's disciples is worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of reverential salutation, the unsurpassed field of merit for the world. He possesses the moral virtues dear to the noble ones, unbroken, untorn, unblemished, unmodeled, freeing, praised by the wise, ungrasped, leading to concentration. A noble disciple, monks, who possesses these 4 things is a stream enterer, no longer bound to the lower world, fixed in destiny, with enlightenment as his destination. Samyutta Nikaya 55.2 5. 343 through 344. Verse 5. Better than sovereignty over the earth. Monks, although a wheel-turning monarch, having exercised supreme sovereignty over the 4 continents, with the breakup of the body after death, is reborn in a good destination, in a heavenly world, in the company of the devas of the Tavatimsa realm, And there, in the Nandana Grove, accompanied by a retinue of celestial nymphs, he enjoys himself supplied and endowed with the five cords of celestial sensual pleasure. Still, as he does not possess four things, he is not freed from hell, the animal realm, and the domain of afflicted spirits, not freed from the plane of misery, the bad destinations, the lower world. Although, monks, a noble disciple maintains himself by lumps of alms food and wears rag robes, still, as he possesses four things, he is freed from hell, the animal realm, and the domain of afflicted spirits, freed from the plane of misery, the bad destinations, the lower world. What four things? Confirmed confidence in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, and the moral virtues dear to the noble ones. And monks, between the obtaining of sovereignty over the four continents and the obtaining of the four things, the obtaining of sovereignty over the four continents is not worth a 16th part of the obtaining of the four things. Samyutta Nikaya, 55.1. 5. 342. Part 3. Non-returning. Verse 1. Abandoning the five lower fetters. 7. There is a path and way, Ananda, to the abandoning of the five lower fetters, that anyone, without relying on that path and way, might know or see or abandon the five lower fetters. This is not possible. Just as when there is a great tree standing, possessed of heartwood, it is not possible that anyone might cut out its heartwood without cutting through its bark and sapwood, so too in the case of abandoning the five lower fetters. There is a path and way, Ananda, to the abandoning of the five lower fetters, that someone, by relying on that path and way, might know and see and abandon the five lower fetters. That is possible. Just as, when there is a great tree standing possessed of heartwood, it is possible that someone might cut out its heartwood by cutting through its bark and sapwood. So too in the case of abandoning the five lower fetters. 8. Suppose, Ananda, the river Ganges were full of water right up to the brim, so that crows could drink from it. And then a feeble man came thinking, "By swimming across the stream with my arms, I shall get safely across the further shore of this river Ganges." Yet, he would not be able to get safely across. So too, when the Dhamma is being taught to someone for the cessation of identity, if his mind does not enter into it and acquire confidence, steadiness, and resolution, then he can be regarded as like the feeble man. Suppose, Ananda, the river Ganges were full of water right up to the brim so that crows could drink from it, and then a strong man came thinking, "By swimming across the stream with my arms, I shall get safely across to the further shore of this river Ganges," and he would be able to get safely across. So too, when the Dhamma is being taught to someone for the cessation of identity, if his mind enters into it and acquires confidence, steadiness, and resolution, then he can be regarded as like the strong man. 9. And what, Ananda, is the path and way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters? Here, with seclusion from acquisitions, with the abandoning of unwholesome states, with the complete tranquilizing of bodily inertia, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a monk enters and dwells in the first jhana, which is accompanied by thought and examination, with rapture and happiness born of seclusion. Whatever exists therein of form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness, he sees those states as impermanent, as suffering, as a disease, as a tumor, as a barb, as a calamity, as an affliction, as alien, as disintegrating, as empty, as non-self. He turns his mind away from those states and directs it toward the deathless element thus. This is the peaceful. This is the sublime. That is, the stilling of all formations, the relinquishing of all acquisitions, the destruction of craving, dispassion, cessation, nibbana. If he is steady in that, he attains the destruction of the taints. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints, Then, through that very desire for the Dhamma, that delight in the Dhamma, with the destruction of the five lower fetters, he becomes one due to be reborn spontaneously in the pure abodes, and there attain final Nibbana without ever returning from that world. This is the path and way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters. 10 through 12. Again, with the subsiding of thought and examination, a monk enters and dwells in the second Jhana. Again, with the fading away as well of rapture, a monk enters and dwells in the third Jhana. Again, with the abandoning of pleasure and pain, a monk enters and dwells in the fourth Jhana, which has neither pain nor pleasure and purity of mindfulness due to equanimity. Whatever exists therein of form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness, he sees those states as impermanent, as non-self. He turns his mind away from those states and directs it toward the deathless element. This is the path and way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters. 13. Again, with the complete transcending of perceptions of forms, with the passing away of perceptions of sensory impingement, with non-attention to perceptions of diversity, aware that space is infinite, a monk enters upon and dwells in the base of the infinity of space. Whatever exists therein of feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness, he sees those states as impermanent, as non-self. He turns his mind away from those states and directs it toward the deathless element. This is the path and way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters. 14. Again, by completely transcending the base of the infinity of space, aware that consciousness is infinite, a monk enters upon and dwells in the base of the infinity of consciousness. Whatever exists therein of feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness, he sees those states as impermanent, as non-self. He turns his mind away from those states and directs it toward the deathless element. This is the path and way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters. 15. Again, by completely transcending the base of the infinity of consciousness, aware that there is nothing, a monk enters upon and dwells in the base of nothingness. Whatever exists therein of feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness, he sees those states as impermanent, as suffering, as a disease, as a tumor, as a barb, as a calamity, as an affliction, as alien, as disintegrating, as void, as non-self. He turns his mind away from those states and directs it toward the deathless element thus. This is the peaceful, this is the sublime, that is, the stilling of all formations, the relinquishing of all acquisitions, the destruction of craving, dispassion, cessation, Nibbana. If he is steady in that, he attains the destruction of the taints. But if he does not attain the destruction of the taints, then through that very desire for the Dhamma, that delight in the Dhamma, with the destruction of the five lower fetters, he becomes one due to be reborn spontaneously in the pure abodes, and there attain final Nibbana without ever returning from that world. This is the path and way to the abandoning of the five lower fetters. From Majjhima Nikaya, 64. Mahamalunkya Sutta, 1, 434 through 437. Verse 2. Four kinds of persons. There are, O monks, four kinds of persons found existing in the world. What for? Here, monks, in this very life a person attains Nibbana through volitional exertion. Here, with the breakup of the body, a person attains final Nibbana through volitional exertion. Here, in this very life, a person attains final Nibbana without volitional exertion. Here, with the breakup of the body, a person attains final Nibbana without volitional exertion. And how, monks, does a person in this very life attain Nibbana through volitional exertion? Here, a monk dwells contemplating the unattractiveness of the body, perceiving repulsiveness in food, perceiving discontent with the entire world, contemplating impermanence in all formations, and the perception of death is well established within him. He dwells relying upon these five powers of a trainee, the powers of faith, moral shame, fear of wrongdoing, energy, and wisdom. These five faculties are extremely strong in him, the faculties of faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Because of the strength of these five faculties, in this very life he attains Nibbana through volitional exertion. This is how a person in this very life attains Nibbana through volitional exertion. And how, monks, does a person with the breakup of the body attain Nibbana through volitional exertion? Here, a monk dwells contemplating the unattractiveness of the body, and the perception of death is well established within him. He dwells relying upon these five powers of a trainee, the powers of faith and wisdom. These five faculties are relatively feeble in him, the faculties of faith and wisdom. Because of the feebleness of these five faculties, with the breakup of the body, he attains Nibbana through volitional exertion. This is how a person with the breakup of the body attains Nibbana through volitional exertion. And how, monks, does a person in this very life attain Nibbana without volitional exertion? Here, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a monk enters and dwells in the first jhana, the fourth jhana. He dwells relying upon these five powers of a trainee, the powers of faith and wisdom. These five faculties are extremely strong in him, the faculties of faith and wisdom. Because of the strength of these five faculties, in this very life he attains Nibbana without volitional exertion. This is how a person, in this very life, attains Nibbana without volitional exertion. And how, monks, does a person with the breakup of the body attain Nibbana without volitional exertion? Here, secluded from sensual pleasures, secluded from unwholesome states, a monk enters and dwells in the first jhana, the fourth jhana. He dwells relying upon these five powers of a trainee, the powers of faith and wisdom. These five faculties are relatively feeble in him, the faculties of faith and wisdom. Because of the feebleness of these five faculties with the breakup of the body, he attains Nibbana without volitional exertion. This is how a person with the breakup of the body attains Nibbana without volitional exertion. These, monks, are the four kinds of persons found existing in the world. Anguttara Nikaya 4, 169, 2, 155 through 156. Verse 3. Six things that partake of true knowledge. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Rajagaha, in the bamboo grove, the squirrel sanctuary. Now, on that occasion, the lay follower Dighavu was sick, afflicted, gravely ill. Then the lay follower Dighavu addressed his father, the householder Jotaika, thus, "Come, householder, approach the Blessed One, pay homage to him in my name with your head at his feet and say, 'Venerable sir, the lay follower Dighavu is sick, afflicted, gravely ill. He pays homage to the Blessed One with his head at the Blessed One's feet.' Then say, 'It would be good, venerable sir, if the Blessed One would come to the residence of the lay follower Dighavu out of compassion.' 'Yes, dear,' the householder Jotaika replied, and he approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side, and delivered his message. The Blessed One consented by silence. Then the Blessed One, dressed and taking bowl and robe, went to the residence of the lay follower Dighavu. He then sat down in the appointed seat and said to the lay follower Dighavu, 'I hope you are bearing up, Dighavu. I hope you are getting better. I hope your painful feelings are subsiding and not increasing, and that their subsiding, not their increase, is to be discerned.' 'Venerable sir, I am not bearing up. I am not getting better. Strong, painful feelings are increasing in me, not subsiding, and their increase, not their subsiding, is to be discerned. Therefore, Dighavu, you should train yourself thus. I will be one who has confirmed confidence in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, and who observes the moral virtues dear to the noble ones, unbroken, untorn, unblemished, unmodeled, freeing, praised by the wise, ungrasped, leading to concentration. It is in such a way that you should train yourself. Venerable Sir, as to these four factors of stream entry that have been taught by the Blessed One, these things exist in me, and I live in conformity with those things. For, Venerable Sir, I have confirmed confidence in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, and I observe the moral virtues dear to the noble ones. Therefore, Dighavu, established upon these four factors of stream entry, you should develop further six things that partake of true knowledge. Here, Dighavu, well contemplating impermanence in all formations, perceiving suffering in what is impermanent, perceiving non-self in what is suffering, perceiving abandonment, perceiving fading away, perceiving cessation. It is in such a way that you should train yourself. Venerable Sir, as to these six things that partake of true knowledge that have been taught by the Blessed One, these things exist in me, and I live in conformity with those things. For, Venerable Sir, I dwell contemplating impermanence in all formations, perceiving suffering in what is impermanent, perceiving non-self in what is suffering, perceiving abandonment, perceiving fading away, perceiving cessation. However, Venerable Sir, I hope that after I expire, my father won't be distressed. Don't be concerned about this, dear Dighavu. Come now, dear Dighavu. Pay close attention to what the Blessed One is saying to you. Then the Blessed One, having given his exhortation to the lay follower Dighavu, rose from his seat and departed. Then, not long after the Blessed One had left, the lay follower Dighavu died. Then a number of monks approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, sat down to one side and said, Venerable Sir, the lay follower Dighavu has died. What is his destination? Where was he reborn? Monks, the lay follower Dighavu was wise. He practiced in accordance with the Dhamma and did not trouble me on account of the Dhamma. With the utter destruction of the five lower fetters, the lay follower Dighavu has become one of spontaneous birth in the pure abodes, due to attain Nibbana there without returning from that world. Samyutta Nikaya 55:3, 5, 344-346. Verse 4. Five kinds of non-returners. Monks, when these seven factors of enlightenment have been developed and cultivated in this way, seven fruits and benefits may be expected. What are the seven fruits and benefits? One attains final knowledge of arahantship early in this very life. If he does not attain final knowledge early in this very life, then one attains final knowledge at the time of death. If one does not attain final knowledge early in this very life or at the time of death, then with the utter destruction of the five lower fetters, one attains Nibbana in the interval. If one does not attain final knowledge early in this very life, or attain Nibbana in the interval, then with the utter destruction of the five lower fetters, one attains Nibbana upon landing. If one does not attain final knowledge early in this very life, or attain Nibbana upon landing, then with the utter destruction of the five lower fetters, one attains Nibbana without volitional exertion. If one does not attain final knowledge early in this very life, or attain Nibbana without volitional exertion, then with the utter destruction of the five lower fetters, one attains Nibbana with volitional exertion. If one does not attain final knowledge early in this very life, or attain Nibbana with volitional exertion, then with the utter destruction of the five lower fetters, one becomes one bound upstream, heading toward the Akanitatha realm. When, monks, the seven factors of enlightenment have been developed and cultivated in this way, these seven fruits and benefits may be expected. Samyutta Nikaya 46:3, 5, 69 through 70. Part 4. The Arahant. Verse 1. Removing the residual conceit, I am. On one occasion, a number of elder monks were dwelling at Kosambi, in Gosita's park. Now, on that occasion, the venerable Hemaka was living at Jujubee Tree Park, sick, afflicted, gravely ill. Then, in the evening, those elder monks emerged from seclusion and addressed the venerable Dasaka thus, "Come, friend Dasaka, approach the monk Hemaka and say to him, 'The elders say to you, friend Hemaka, we hope that you are bearing up, friend. We hope that you are getting better. We hope that your painful feelings are subsiding and not increasing, and that their subsiding, not their increase, is to be discerned.' 'Yes, friends,' the venerable Dasaka replied, and he approached the venerable Hemaka and delivered his message. The venerable Hemaka answered, 'I am not bearing up, friend. I am not getting better. Strong painful feelings are increasing in me, not subsiding, and their increase, not their subsiding, is to be discerned.' Then the venerable Dasaka approached the elder monks and reported what the venerable Hemaka had said. They told him, 'Come, friend Dasaka, approach the monk Hemaka and say to him, "The elders say to you, friend Hemaka, these five aggregates subject to clinging have been spoken of by the Blessed One, that is, form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness. Does the venerable Hemaka regard anything as self or as belonging to self among these five aggregates subject to clinging?' 'Yes, friends,' the venerable Dasaka replied, and he approached the venerable Hemaka and delivered his message. The venerable Hemaka replied, 'These five aggregates subject to clinging have been spoken of by the Blessed One, that is, form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness. Among these five aggregates subject to clinging, I do not regard anything as self or as belonging to self.' Then the venerable Dasaka approached the elder monks and reported what the venerable Hemaka had said. They replied, 'Come, friend Dasaka, approach the monk Hemaka and say to him, "If the venerable Hemaka does not regard anything among these five aggregates as self or as belonging to self, then he is an arahant, one whose taints are destroyed."' 'Yes, friends,' the venerable Dasaka replied, and he approached the venerable Hemaka and delivered his message. The venerable Hemaka replied, 'These five aggregates subject to clinging have been spoken of by the Blessed One, that is, form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness. I do not regard anything among these five aggregates subject to clinging as self or as belonging to self, yet I am not an arahant, one whose taints are destroyed. Friends, the notion "I am" has not yet vanished in me in relation to these five aggregates subject to clinging, but I do not regard anything among them as "this I am."' Then the venerable Dasaka approached the elder monks and reported what the venerable Hemaka had said. They replied, 'Come, friend Dasaka, approach the monk Hemaka and say to him, "The elders say to you, friend Hemaka, when you speak of this, I am, what is it that you speak of as I am? Do you speak of form as I am? Or do you speak of I am apart from form? Do you speak of feeling, of perception, of volitional formations, of consciousness as I am? Or do you speak of I am apart from consciousness? When you speak of this I am, friend Hemaka, what is it that you speak of as I am?' 'Yes, friends,' the venerable Dasaka replied, and he approached the venerable Hemaka and delivered his message. 'Enough, friend Dasaka, Why keep running back and forth? Bring me my staff, friend. I'll go to the elder monks myself. Then the venerable Chemaka, leaning on his staff, approached the elder monks, exchanged greetings with them, and sat down to one side. The elder monks then said to him, Friend Chemaka, when you speak of this, I am, what is it that you speak of as I am? Friends, I do not speak of form as I am, nor do I speak of I am apart from form. I do not speak of feelings as I am, nor of perception as I am, nor of volitional formations as I am, nor of consciousness as I am, nor do I speak of I am apart from consciousness. Friends, although the notion I am has not yet vanished in me in relation to these five aggregates subject to clinging, still I do not regard anything among them as this I am. Suppose, friends, there is the scent of a blue, red, or white lotus. Would one be speaking rightly if one would say, the scent belongs to the petals, or the scent belongs to the stalk, or the scent belongs to the pistils? No, friend. And how, friends, should one answer if one is to answer rightly? Answering rightly, friend, one should answer, the scent belongs to the flower. So too, friends, I do not speak of form as I am, nor do I speak of I am apart from form. I do not speak of feelings as I am, nor of perceptions as I am, nor of volitional formations as I am, nor of consciousness as I am, nor do I speak of I am apart from consciousness. Friends, although the notion I am has not yet vanished in me in relation to these five aggregates subject to clinging, still, I do not regard anything among them as this I am. Friends, even though a noble disciple has abandoned the five lower fetters, still, in relation to the five aggregates subject to clinging, there lingers in him a residual conceit, I am, a desire, I am, an underlying tendency, I am, that has not yet been uprooted. Sometime later he dwells contemplating rise and fall in the five aggregates subject to clinging. Such is form, such its origin, such its passing away, such is feeling, such is perception, such are volitional formations, such is consciousness, such its origin, such its passing away. As he dwells thus contemplating rise and fall in the five aggregates subject to clinging, the residual conceit I am, the desire I am, the underlying tendency I am that had not yet been uprooted, this comes to be uprooted. Suppose, friends, a cloth has been soiled and stained, and its owner gives it to a laundryman. The laundryman would scour it evenly with cleaning salt, lye, or cow dung, and rinse it in clean water. Even though that cloth would become pure and clean, it would still retain a residual smell of cleaning salt, lye, or cow dung that had not yet vanished. The laundryman would then give it back to the owners. The owners would put it in a sweet-scented chest, and the residual smell of cleaning salt, lye, or cow dung that had not yet vanished would vanish. So too, friends, even though a noble disciple has abandoned the five lower fetters, still, in relation to the five aggregates subject to clinging, there lingers in him a residual conceit, I am, a desire, I am, an underlying tendency, I am, that has not yet been uprooted. As he dwells thus contemplating rise and fall in the five aggregates subject to clinging, the residual conceit I am, the desire I am, the underlying tendency I am that had not yet been uprooted, this comes to be uprooted. When this was said, the elder monks said to the venerable Chemaka, We did not ask our questions in order to trouble the venerable Chemaka, but we thought that the venerable Chemaka would be capable of explaining, teaching, proclaiming, establishing, disclosing, analyzing, and elucidating the Blessed One's teaching in detail. And the Venerable Chemaka has explained, taught, proclaimed, established, disclosed, analyzed, and elucidated the Blessed One's teaching in detail. Thus, the elder monks were elated and delighted in the Venerable Chemaka's statement, and while this discourse was being spoken, the minds of 60 elder monks and of the Venerable Chemaka were liberated from the taints by non-clinging. Samyutta Nikaya 22:89, 3, 126 through 132. Verse 2. The Trainee and the Arahant. At Kosambi in Rositas Park, the Blessed One addressed the monks thus. There is a method, monks, by means of which a monk who is a trainee, standing on the plane of a trainee, might understand, I am a trainee. While a monk beyond training, standing on the plane of one beyond training, might understand, I am one beyond training. And what, monks, is the method by means of which a monk who is a trainee, standing on the plane of a trainee, understands, I am a trainee? Here, monks, a monk who is a trainee understands as it really is, this is suffering. This is the origin of suffering. This is the cessation of suffering. This is the way leading to the cessation of suffering. This is a method by means of which a monk who is a trainee, standing on the plane of a trainee, understands, I am a trainee. Again, monks, a monk who is a trainee considers thus, is there outside here another ascetic or Brahmin who teaches a Dhamma so real, true, and actual as the Blessed One does? He understands thus, there is no other ascetic or Brahmin outside here who teaches a Dhamma so real and actual as the Blessed One does. This too is a method by means of which a monk who is a trainee, standing on the plane of a trainee, understands, I am a trainee. Again, monks, a monk who is a trainee understands the five spiritual faculties, the faculties of faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. He does not yet dwell having contacted with the body, that which is their destination, their culmination, their fruit, their final goal. But, having pierced it through with wisdom, he sees. This too is a method by means of which a monk who is a trainee, standing on the plane of a trainee, understands, I am a trainee. And what, monks, is the method by means of which a monk beyond training, standing on the plane of one beyond training, understands, I am one beyond training? Here, monks, a monk beyond training understands the five spiritual faculties, the faculties of faith, wisdom. He dwells having contacted with the body that which is their destination, their culmination, their fruit, their final goal, and having pierced it through with wisdom, he sees. This is a method by means of which a monk beyond training, standing on the plane of one beyond training, understands, I am one beyond training. Again, monks, a monk beyond training understands the six faculties, the eye faculty, the ear faculty, the nose faculty, the tongue faculty, the body faculty, the mind faculty. He understands these six faculties will cease completely and totally without remainder, and no other six faculties will arise anywhere in that way. This too is a method by means of which a monk beyond training, standing on the plane of one beyond training, understands, I am one beyond training. Samyutta Nikaya, 48, 53, 5, 229 through 230. Verse 3. A monk whose crossbar has been lifted. 30. Monks. An arahant is called one whose crossbar has been lifted, whose trench has been filled in, whose pillar has been uprooted, one who has no bolt. A noble one whose banner is lowered, whose burden is lowered, who is unfettered. 31. And how is the Arahant one whose crossbar has been lifted? Here the Arahant has abandoned ignorance, has cut it off at the root, made it like a palm stump, done away with it, so that it is no longer subject to future arising. That is how he is one whose crossbar has been lifted. 32. And how is the Arahant one whose trench has been filled in? Here, the Arahant has abandoned the round of rebirths, the process of renewed existence, has cut it off at the root, so that it is no longer subject to future arising. That is how he is one whose trench has been filled in. 33. And how is the Arahant one whose pillar has been uprooted? Here the Arahant has abandoned craving, has cut it off at the root, so that it is no longer subject to future arising. That is how he is one whose pillar has been uprooted.